It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. New EPA rules released earlier this week aim to limit methane emissions from the oil and gas industry, and it could have a big impact on Pennsylvania. The Obama administration's goal is to rein in methane emissions by 40 to 45% below 2012 levels in the next decade. But while environmental groups say the state should do more to prevent pollution from the powerful greenhouse gas, the state's gas industry says it's already lowering its methane pollution, and more regulations are costly and unnecessary. I'm joined now by phone from Washington by Howard Feldman, Senior Director of Regulatory and Scientific Affairs for the American Petroleum Institute. Howard Feldman, good to have you with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Also with us is Matt Watson. He is Associate Vice President of the Environmental Defense Fund's Climate and Energy Program. Matt Watson, good to have you with us.
Hello, Paul. Thanks for having me. And hello, Howard.
The EPA will accept public comments for 60 days after the rule is published in the Federal Register. We can take your questions and comments today via email at esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh. Wouldn't these regulations broaden the technologies already in existence that are driving down methane emissions from oil and gas operations? What do we think about this? Howard Feldman, let's begin with you.
Sure. So we think right now, we put regulations in place in 2012. Those regulations are working. Those combined with industry voluntary emissions reductions have driven emissions down. We know that. Emissions from hydraulic fracturing are down nearly 79% since 2005. From the entire field production are down 38%. So we know we're making progress already with the existing regulations, and we don't see any need to pile on additional regulations at this time.
So you're saying that the proposal, you go along with others in the industry who say that the proposal is unnecessarily costly, that it's redundant in some ways, but don't these new rules that the EPA wants to put in place, don't they broaden your ability and the industry's ability to control these emissions?
So there are a lot of incentives already. The industry is very incentivized to reduce methane emissions. Methane is the primary component of natural gas, which we all use in our homes and in power plants. So we are already incentivized. Industry has developed the technology to reduce these emissions, something called reduced emission completions. We've developed that technology and deployed it. And we continue to find new ways to reduce emissions. And because of that, we don't think we need to have another layer of regulation on top of what exists federally and in many states already.
Matt Watson, what do you think of the new rules, and do they go far enough in your opinion?
Yeah, so let me take a second and first put it in perspective. I mean, we have an enormous problem here. Currently, oil and gas companies are dumping more than 7 million tons of methane into the atmosphere every year. Now, that has the same 20-year climate impact as 160 coal-fired power plants. And in fact, about 25% of the warming that we're experiencing today comes from methane emissions from the oil and the gas sector. So it's a big problem. And at the same time, methane itself and other pollutants, VOCs, that are part of these emissions, are contributing in a big way to the smog problems that are choking our cities and increasingly are causing air quality problems in rural areas where oil and gas production is prevalent. So this is a big deal. As to the question of whether voluntary measures have worked, I think the numbers speak for itself. 7 million tons of methane pollution into the atmosphere every year. That's not okay. You know, the marquee voluntary program in the country, EPA's Natural Gas Star program, has been around for a couple of decades now. And of the maybe 10,000 operators in this country, only about 40 have ever participated in it. So while we'd certainly applaud companies, and there are companies, leading companies, that have stepped forward to take voluntary action, clearly a voluntary approach is insufficient. And we need basic common sense rules in place to make sure that everybody is operating at to some basic minimum standards.
The new rules only apply to new or modified oil and gas operations. So is that, in your view, Matt, is that keeping groups like yours from taking us to a better level, a more efficient level of mitigating these pollutants and reducing the impact that they have?
Yeah, well, the proposal that EPA announced this week, we shouldn't undersell it. It really is an incredibly important first step. You know, for the first time, we'll be tackling a pollutant and a set of pollution sources that are totally unregulated right now at the federal level. So this really is an important first step. But you're right, you know, for years and decades to come, a majority of the emissions are going to come from these oil and gas wells and associated equipment that are in existence today. And this proposal doesn't address emissions from those sources. So certainly to meet that national goal of reducing emissions by 40 to 45% by 2025, we're going to have to get at existing sources. And of course, in Pennsylvania, that's a big problem as well. You've got tens of thousands of gas wells operating. You're the second largest producer of natural gas in the country, and so the problem doesn't get fully solved until existing sources are addressed.
And from your standpoint, Howard Feldman, I read an interesting quote from you in reaction to the EPA's announcement of these new rules, and your feeling was that the devil's in the details, that there are all sorts of factors that have to be looked at and worked through before you really fully see the impact of what is being put in place here and whether it's necessary to do it against what the industry has already voluntarily done.
Yeah, so there's actually four proposed rules that came out, not just one, but four, and one of those would apply specifically to areas that don't meet the ozone standard, which we've already heard about. Now, we've made tremendous progress as a society on ozone already, but there are still areas that don't meet the ozone standard, and we think that those areas should work towards ozone in the meantime, but some of these rules would apply to existing sources in ozone areas that don't meet the standard there. So it's to say that they don't apply to any existing sources is not correct. The problem with existing sources is the cost effectiveness to control those sources is not the same as new and modified. As a society, we throughout the Clean Air Act, we always know it's easier to clean up new facilities more than existing. And we would apply that also to oil wells and gas wells where most of the production comes from the newer wells, and therefore, and more of the emissions are associated with that. So that's the place to make the effort in addressing the new wells as they are put in place, and the existing wells, with time, their emissions reduce in and of themselves. But remember, companies are already using technology to find and reduce leaks, and that's why we've seen this tremendous progress in reducing emissions. At the same time, the production has gone up.
Well, with regard to what you're saying, Howard, there's an applicable quote here that came from Cheryl Wilson, who is an energy policy analyst with Bloomberg Intelligence, and she says the guidelines, quote, aren't technically enforceable because states choose how to reduce ozone emissions. The states choose how. What about this?
Right. That it'll be up to Pennsylvania to decide how to apply the control technique guidelines. That is true. But there's a whole lot of incentive already that the industry has, and many states have already put in place regulation. So the trend is down on emissions, and we know, and through the use of increased natural gas that we've made as part of the shale revolution, carbon dioxide emissions from power plants are at 27-year lows. So the natural gas is actually reducing emissions in the power sector dramatically. So that's a trend that we see, and we are a part of that. So we don't want to do anything to jeopardize the shale revolution that we have underway.
And Matt Watson, what should the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection do? I mean, how can it step up and pick up the slack?
Well, the CTGs, the ozone area rules that Howard was referring to, those actually apply to VOCs, not methane. So that's not correct that there are methane rules in this proposal for existing sources. Pennsylvania has a great opportunity here to craft a program that is tailor-made to the Pennsylvania situation, the production profile, the industry profile, and get major reductions in a way that works for Pennsylvania. We've been hearing and seeing some hopeful signs out of the Wolf administration, so it wouldn't surprise me at all if they became one of the leading states in the country in tackling this problem in a smart, cost-effective way.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we are talking about new EPA rules released earlier this week looking to limit methane emissions from the oil and gas industry and the impact that it could have on Pennsylvania. These recommendations coming from the Obama administration. We're talking about this with Matt Watson, who's Associate Vice President of the Environmental Defense Fund's Climate and Energy Program, and also Howard Feldman, who is Senior Director of Regulatory and Scientific Affairs for the American Petroleum Institute. You can join us today via email or Twitter. Our email address, esspgh@wesa.fm, and we are on Twitter at esspgh. Gentlemen, is this the most critical period for getting emissions under control, you know, based on what the scientists are telling us with the rate of global warming and its impact, the greenhouse effect and its impact on pollution and all of that?
So I'll take
it. It is, Paul. And it's important. We're going to get into a little science here. If we want to talk about this, but it's important to understand the differences between how methane and CO2 behave in the atmosphere. Methane is an incredibly potent greenhouse gas, more than 80 times the climate warming impact of CO2 in the near term.
Why is that? Dante, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Matt, and I'll let you continue with the explanation, but we've heard this, we've heard methane referred to as this powerful greenhouse gas. What makes it so powerful and, in the view of so many, so detrimental to our atmosphere?
Well, I'd have to pull in our scientists to explain the atmospheric chemistry behind that, but essentially it has a greater, what they call, global warming potential, so a greater radiative forcing potential. And what happens is methane has this really big impact in the near term, like I was saying, over the first 20 years, more than 80 times the impact of a equal amount of CO2, and then over time it degrades into, among other things, CO2. So what you need to do is, the benefit here of reducing methane is that we can slow the warming that's happening today, but then of course we have to continue to make those major reductions in CO2, which is a molecule that hangs around in the atmosphere for a very, very long time, having that climate impact. So it's a both-and situation. It's not an either-or. You need to do both methane and CO2 because they behave differently in the atmosphere. Now, the great news is that with methane, we've got one of the cheapest, most cost-effective pollution reduction opportunities out there. The numbers that the EPA put out this week, the costs that they were projecting were about 1 penny per 1,000 cubic feet of natural gas to make the reductions that they would get under the proposal. Last year, a study by ICF International, which we commissioned and has been broadly accepted, found that we could reduce methane emissions by 40% for less than 1 penny per MCF of gas produced. You don't find a better bang for your buck than that.
And Howard,
and just one last
okay,
point,
go ahead,
Paul. I want to correct something Paul said earlier. He was saying that it's more expensive to reduce emissions at existing well sites and other facilities.
Do you mean something? Do you mean something Howard said?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay.
The fact is that, for a lot of these strategies, for some of the biggest emission sources, for example, fugitive emissions where you just have leaks going on, you know, it doesn't cost any more to do that in an existing facility than it does at a new one. You know, going around with an infrared camera and finding and fixing leaks costs the same in either place.
Howard, I want to let you respond to what Matt is laying out
sure.
here.
Sure. Well, EPA estimated the cost, the EPA estimate, and their engineers, we are not necessarily field engineers, their estimate of the cost was $300 to $400 million for this. So it is a very significant rule in terms of costly. You know, so we don't degrade this. The nature of the emissions, unfortunately, is that they're not linear and they're not standard. Sometimes you find a high leaker. That's what the science has told us. And those get addressed. The companies have put in place programs where they go around looking for these leaks and reducing them. So the companies are incentivized to reduce their emissions because this is the product they sell. So they've taken those steps, and that's why we've seen the progress that we have. Some people want to say, I've heard people say the progress is because of the regulations. Actually, we've made a lot of progress even before the regulations came in place, but we're working right now on this. The other thing that that we heard mentioned was that the control technique guideline rule is a VOC control program. Well, as we all know, the VOC controls actually get methane at the same time. So you don't need to distinguish, and we don't need a separate methane regulation on top of the VOC regulations we already have. So those rules are working. They're effective. And to put in some place something that's not cost effective doesn't make sense.
Matt Watson,
Paul, if I could,
go ahead.
I hate to get wonky on you here, but if you dig into the data, what you find is that fugitive emissions, which is what Howard was just talking about, these leaks, that's a source area that has actually been increasing, not decreasing. And so while some companies have put in place programs to reduce those emissions through leak detection and repair, and some states, Colorado, Wyoming, Ohio, have put rules in place to require leak detection and repair programs, most companies haven't done that, and most states aren't doing it. And that's why you need a basic federal framework in place to act as a floor. We would certainly encourage companies and states to go beyond that floor.
Well, another thing that certainly people like about these rules, these new rules from the EPA, is that, correct me if I'm wrong, gentlemen, but they do more than just address methane. Am I right?
Well, at the same time, the same controls you put in place for methane are the controls you put in place for VOC. They're somewhat interchangeable in the sense that once you're looking for a leak, you're capturing the leak. And that's capturing both types of emissions at the same time.
So going forward, then, what do we need to look at tweaking? And we'll look at this from the standpoint of environmental advocates as well as people who represent the industry. And Howard Feldman, I'll start with you. What do people in the industry, as you represent the American Petroleum Institute, want to see going forward?
So API supports a common sense regulatory approach that builds on cost-effective controls that are already required by EPA. So that's what we're looking for to try to get that out of this rulemaking process. We think combined with EPA's already put in place a new voluntary initiative, combined with the voluntary initiative that EPA has moving forward and the measures that the companies are taking, we think that methane is being adequately addressed from a societal perspective, and nothing should be done to jeopardize what we call the shale revolution in the United States.
Matt Watson?
Well, what we're looking for from the administration and from companies is an answer to this question, and that is, how far would this proposal take us toward meeting our national goal of reducing those emissions by 45% by 2025? They'll take us part of the way there, but we're unclear on how far yet. So let's count it all up and see where we are and then figure out what we have to do next to get all the way there.
Matt Watson is Associate Vice President of the Environmental Defense Fund's Climate and Energy Program, and Howard Feldman, who also joined us, is Senior Director of Regulatory and Scientific Affairs for the American Petroleum Institute, joining us by phone from Washington. Gentlemen, we appreciate your time and for being on Essential Pittsburgh today.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up, how a local company is partnering with the Pittsburgh Public Schools to provide proper eye care for students. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.